Of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Joanna LaForgia from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be presenting content from the June-July 2025 issue of Southern Living Magazine. This week, we will finish up the picture of health feature that we began in our last episode, and then we'll move on to the Grumpy Gardener, which is in every issue, of course, and then a new column, if we have time, called Live from the South, that they are just starting. We're just starting this month. All right, we're ready. And this magazine, the cover of this magazine, has a big peach cobbler on it in a pan, in a skillet that's has robin's egg blue handles. And the peach cobbler is golden with, it has three scoops of vanilla ice cream on it. And top to bottom, the cover says, Southern Living, Taste of Summer, Peach Desserts, Chocolate Pie, and Other Sweet Delights, The Veggie Garden of Your Dreams, A Carolina House Escape, and Next Level Grilling Recipes, plus Mountain Magic in North Georgia. All right, so back to our picture of health feature. We were just beginning House Call, which is in the right-hand column of this page. And this is by Neil. Let's see, they don't have his last name here. Oh. But we'll just read and talk about these sunglasses. It's called The Eyes Have It. Protect your vision with doc-approved shades. Everyone should wear sunglasses when they go outside, and the earlier this starts in life, the better, says Dr. Andrew S. Eisman. Don't let a cloudy, overcast day convince you to ditch the shades, the ophthalmologist adds. The risk of ultraviolet radiation is always present. And this photo, it's a profile photo, listeners, at the top of the column, a small circle, and it has a tomato red background. And the man, the doctor, I imagine, is in the foreground, is wearing a suit, a black suit, white tailored shirt, black and brown diagonally striped tie. He is bald and smiling and rather thin. All right, and he continues. When it comes to finding an effective pair, he says to look for 100% protection from UVA and UVB rays to minimize the risk of corneal damage, macular degeneration, cataracts, and eyelid skin cancers. Bigger lenses that cover more of the eye and eyelid are better, too. The price of glasses does not always correlate with the quality, so be careful to buy those that have these features, he explains. And there's a photo of Nell's sunglasses on the bottom, and it says they are in chai tortoise / rose. They have rose-colored, a little bit rose in the corners. They're women's glasses with chai tortoiseshell. They're like an off-white and a dark brown in different scattered pattern with kind of pointy rose-colored corners. And they are $30 from peepers.com. We now turn to the Grumpy Gardener in the at-home feature of every magazine. And it always begins with a joke, a cartoon. And here is one. In this one, there is a man approaching the customer service desk in a store. There's a big sign that says returns with an arrow pointing to the window. And in the window, is the store employee. She has long dark hair, parted in the middle, and a confused look on her face. We'll learn why in a moment. There's a picture in the background of an office building that is blue with some green trees and a green lawn before it. It's very skeletal. There aren't many details in it. And it has a coffee brown frame. And then behind her is a rose-colored counter with a gray computer printer or some kind of a equipment behind her upon the counter. And the saleswoman is wearing a dark pink, almost rose-colored suit. And she has a white name tag on, but there's no name on it, and a white-collared shirt under that. And she has a computer before her, the top of a laptop computer before her. Standing, looking at her, she is looking at a man who is talking to her, the customer. He has white hair and glasses. We see only his back and bit of his profile. He's wearing jeans and brown shoes. His jeans have two pockets in the back. And his shirt is spring green with darker green lines forming boxes, checks on the shirt. He's holding a shovel that's as high as he is. Looks like a hoe, really, but it's as high, it's as tall as he is. It's the brown handle is on the ground, and the point of the shovel is on the top. And the caption reads, he's saying to the salesperson, "I'm returning this digital shovel. It digs only virtual holes." Okay, and now we'll start The Grumpy Gardener by Steve Bender. Dear Grumpy, with all the smartphone technology these days, can you recommend any digital gardening tools so I can spend less time working in the yard and more time watching TV? Signed, Rob. Tired of the old fresh air and sunshine, eh, Rob? Yeah, that's so 1990s. The most obvious examples of tech in the garden today are sprinkler systems and lawn mowers you can program and control remotely using apps on your phone. But what if you download a virus that keeps your sprinkler running for weeks while you're sunning in Majorca, causing it to flood your teak wine cellar and cigar bar? Or a rogue file could send a smart mower crashing through its digital fence, making it buzz 2 inches of fur off a neighbor's cat. Will the product warranty or your homeowner's insurance cover that? Nope, nope, nope. Call me a Neanderthal, but I prefer a dumb shovel, trowel, or pruning saw that will fit in my hands and won't need updates. Log me out. And the next letter, long live the queen. Grumpy, I feel like I have been living a lie. I just learned that Queen Anne's lace is non-native and invasive. Is this true? I'm almost 70 years old. It's been around all my life, and I've never seen it take over anything. Should I not sow seeds this fall? Signed, Mary. It is true that Queen Anne's lace is non-native. It's very closely related to the common carrot, which is basically an edible version of Queen Anne's lace. However, I don't consider it invasive at all. To me, it's just a pretty wildflower I look forward to seeing each year. Plus, black swallowtail caterpillars feed on its foliage, and bees and butterflies enjoy its nectar. So away. And this is clematis woes. I have a 10-year-old clematis vine. This year, it turned brown at the ground after it bloomed, and then the discoloration continued all the way up to the top. What happened? The culprit is a disease called clematis wilt. Its fungal spores live in dead stems and plant debris at the base of the vine, and then reinfect new growth the next year. Fungicides won't help. What you need to do is cut off all diseased foliage and stems and throw them out with the trash. Also discard debris around the base. The good news is that the fungus doesn't affect the roots, so the clematis will come back. To promote future health, ensure the vine isn't crowded by other plants, has good air circulation around it, and gets at least 6 hours of sun a day. Don't plant this. How can I get rid of Mexican petunias? I added just one, and now they're coming up everywhere. Signed, Sue. Often sold in garden centers, Mexican petunia, Ruella simplex, formerly known as R. Brittoniana, boasts very pretty purple-blue flowers. However, it's a ruthless spreader, particularly one named Purple Showers. In USDA zones 8 to 10, the roots grow deep and wide and are nearly impossible to dig up. Plus, it seeds itself all over. A volcano or asteroid might destroy it, but most people are afraid of such things. I suggest treating it according to label directions with a herbicide containing tricloper, and we'll spell that T-R-I-C-L-O-P-Y-R. Like crossbow or bio-advanced brush killer. And those have initial caps. Those are brands, listeners. So those are the fungicides, crossbow or bio-advanced brush killer. Hope for hydrangeas. I live in the bay in Sarasota, Florida. Is there a hydrangea that will survive here? Signed, Carl. Wait, Carl, do you actually live in the bay? Unless you have a houseboat, neither you nor a hydrangea will ever reach old age. In any case, you're located right on the southern limit of where big leaf hydrangeas, or Hydrangea macrophylla, the ones with blue or pink flowers, will flourish. Pick a spot that gets morning sun and afternoon shade. Amend sandy coastal soil with plenty of organic matter, such as composted cow manure. Be prepared to water your hydrangeas frequently in hot weather. Remember to use only fresh water, not that from the bay. And know your plants. The column here has a picture of a very deep, very intense purple-leaved plant. It's got pointy, veined leaves. It's called Persian Shield. Protect your garden's sterling reputation with this electrifying foliage plant. Persian Shields can do more than fend off swords. The gardening kind, Strobilanthus diurnus, offers brilliant color from spring to fall. Its broadly oval, pointed leaves are 6 to 8 inches long, have a metallic sheen, and are variegated with magenta, silver, and green hues atop solid purple undersides. A perennial in USDA zones 9 and 10, and an annual elsewhere, Persian Shield grows 2 to 3 feet tall and wide. It does fine in flower beds, but I like it best in containers mixed with silver, blue, pink, and even orange plants. Give it fertile, moist, well-drained soil and part sun. Direct summer rays may bleach the colors. Pinch back any stems that get leggy. By Steve Bender. And here is Grumpy's Gripe of the Month, listeners. I'm not growing tomatoes this year. Not because I don't want to, but because I can't. Like all fruiting veggies, tomatoes need full sun to produce a decent crop. Unfortunately, the sunniest area on my property is in the front yard near the road. This is not a good place. Neighbors in the burbs don't like mater patches by the streets. And if they did, you know that there would be a parade of SUVs, all with smoked windows and their lights turned off, inching by at night so the thieves could help themselves. I did try growing a Cherokee purple in a pot on my driveway once. Two measly tomatoes the size of cue balls took until September to ripen. Then a squirrel in a ski mask robbed them, of course. And this grumpy scribe of the month is always accompanied by a small photo, a caricature of Steve Bender with his bushy brown hair and rimless glasses, and he's grumpy face, mustache and beard, brown mustache and beard. He's sitting on a green chair and typing on an old-fashioned typewriter. And that as a desk, he's using an upside-down wheelbarrow. The wheelbarrow is red, and the handles extend past Grumpy's chair. And there's this yellow, little yellow flower coming up with a big lips and a smile on its face, smiling at Grumpy, and one of its leaves is like a hand holding down the page of the typewriter, and the other leaf is extended to hug Grumpy around his neck, maybe to cheer him up. And there's a small caption here that says, "Ask the Grump. No question goes unanswered," on his Facebook page, facebook.com/SL for Southern Living, SL Grumpy Gardener. Okay, that's just one SL. facebook.com/SL Grumpy Gardener. Okay, and now we will move on to a new column that Southern Living is featuring for the summer. In the in-season section of the magazine, this is called Mr. Southern Living. And there's a photo of a man standing with, he's wearing a teal-colored linen jacket, it looks like, and a dark blue undershirt, and he has a white handkerchief in the pocket of the suit jacket. He's smiling. He's an African-American man, dark brown hair, and he's has his hands, one hand is over the other, and one elbow is leaning on the railing of a dock. He's on the dock of a river. There's a boat in the blurred background is a boat and a bridge. And so it's light blue toned, like ocean color tones in the background there. And he is smiling brightly. And the caption says, "Closer to home. Craig Melvin in New Orleans from Mardi Gras this year." Mr. Southern Living, live from the South. Our new column with Today Show anchor Craig Melvin. Oh, today, no wonder he looked so good there. Today, our new column with Today Show anchor Craig Melvin celebrates his South Carolina roots. Catch Craig Melvin on the popular morning show, and you may hear a fellow anchor call him Mr. Southern Living. It's an apt moniker for the Columbia, South Carolina-born journalist who was raised in a household where the magazine came third or fourth to the Holy Bible, he says. His mother, Betty Jo, subscribed for the recipes and Good Eats. And Good Eats were a staple of family gatherings. Here in Connecticut, where I live now, there are foods that are designated for special occasions. If it's a celebratory meal, maybe you'll have fried whatever and collard greens or black-eyed peas and white rice. For us growing up, sometimes that was a random Wednesday. You didn't fully appreciate that until you move. You don't fully appreciate that until you move out of the South. Breaking bread together is a value he and his wife, Lindsay Sarniak, are working to instill in their two children, Delano and Sybil. "We do have Sunday dinner in this little booth in our basement," he says. "If it's a good Sunday, the kids are getting along and we can reflect on the week that was and look forward to the one ahead. As for what's on the table, It's typically lighter than the fare of his childhood. Think turkey burgers instead of fried chicken. But that's about the only element of his southernness he's budged on. I still talk about as slow as I did growing up in Colombia, much to the dismay of many a network producer, he says. I'm in no hurry to finish a sentence. And this is Craig's recipe for a low country summer. 5 ingredients for his favorite beach vacation. An annual tradition. Their pilgrimage to Hilton Head Island, South Carolina, began as a combined birthday and Christmas gift for Betty Jo. It was important that as many family members as possible could get there, he says, of how they chose the spot. We've been going back ever since. A no-fuss institution. Disposable plates and checked tablecloths are the marks of a bona fide seafood dive, so they always plan a pit stop at the Sea Shack for crab cakes and tasty sides. I eat a lot of hush puppies, Craig adds. Coastal souvenirs. In addition to crabbing, my kids go seashell hunting, he says, which turns into me having to put 4 Ziploc bags filled with shells in my suitcase to take them back to Connecticut. Good tunes. My beach music playlist doesn't change, Craig says. It's the same songs I've been listening to for a decade. Hootie and the Blowfish, Dave Matthews Band, and 70s Soul and Funk. I have a lot of Chris Stapleton on there now, too. Plenty of togetherness. A southern summer is defined by many things, he notes, from a glass of bourbon to being on the water. But the most important is family, Craig says. If you're not doing it with family, you're wasting a week. It's all about making good memories. And here is the local's guide, Time to Take a Dip. Now that summer has set the thermostat to sizzle, head to one of our top spots to cool off. This is by James T. Black. And it begins with a photo of a almost glacial blue. It's like a teal blue river or creek. And in the background are greens, evergreens, blurred greens. And there are rocks and tiny waterfalls along this creek. Tiny waterfalls spilling into the creek. And in the background there are 2 people, appear to be elderly people, a man and a woman, and they're wearing yellow hats. He's wearing a green swimsuit. She's wearing a pinkish red swimsuit. And they're sitting on the rocks, and across the narrow creek, it's narrow there, are 2 young ladies wearing 2-piece bathing suits. I can't see them clearly, but one bathing suit is a dark olive green and the other is wine colored. And then in the foreground where the creek widens, there are 2 younger girls swimming. We see just the tops of their heads, and they have brown hair that's wet and slicked back, and can't see them too clearly. And these are a few places that the locals recommend for taking a dip like this. Kinloch Falls, K-I-N-L-O-C-K, Lawrence County, Alabama. While it takes a bit of driving to find this gem in northwest Alabama, once you reach the refreshing pool at the base, you'll agree the trip was well worth it. About 12 miles northeast of Haleyville in the Bankhead National Forest, Kinloch Falls isn't far from the road. The cascade tumbles 15 feet over well-worn rock ridges, and you can also climb down the hillside next to the falls. Both routes are slippery, so proceed with caution. Even on a stifling afternoon, the stream below stays clear and cold. Pack a picnic and spend some time enjoying the views before getting in the water. Silver Run Falls, and this is in Cashiers, North Carolina. No strenuous hiking is required to reach these stunning falls, which drop 30 feet. This easy-to-find wonder is just a quarter mile from a roadside parking area off State 107. You can take it all in from observation points along the trail and bank, or, with a little more walking, get a closer look at the natural beauty from the calm pond at the bottom. This shallow pool is popular for wading and splashing around on sweltering days. Silver Run Falls can get overcrowded on weekends, so try to get there early so you can stake out a spot. Aiken State Park, A-I-K-E-N, in Windsor, South Carolina. You can float, fish, hike, swim, and learn African-American history in the process at this 1,067-acre natural area on the banks of the South Fork Edisto River east of Aiken. Underground springs fill the four fishing and swimming lakes, while the river's South Fork offers a calm flow for canoeing and kayaking. When you've had your fill of the water, take a stroll along one of the hiking trails where interpretive signs tell the story of the facility's unique beginnings. Aiken State Park was originally constructed in the 1930s by the Civilian Conservation Corps, a Depression-era government program, with much of the work being done by an African-American detachment. Their tremendous skills are evident in several original structures throughout the park, including a bathhouse still used today. And Hamilton Pool Preserve in Dripping Springs, Texas, about 30 miles west of Austin and 60 miles east of Luckenbach. This swimming hole in a spring-fed box canyon is as famous in Texas as Waylon and Willie. And that is our time for today's episode of Southern Living Magazine, listeners. We hope you've enjoyed it, and we hope you'll listen next time. I am Joanna LaForgia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Just look under specials and triangle bulletin board, and that's where we are temporarily mislabeled. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Again, that's 919-832-5138. So long until next time.